The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Bit and Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but some of the arguments Christians put forth for the existence of God are just plain laughable. That, at least, is the opinion of our friend Tom, a listener and atheist who has been writing me the past few weeks with questions and comments and then listening to my responses over the air. Welcome to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters, a place where people can express their opinions of Christianity and still be treated with respect. Unfortunately, this courtesy is not always reciprocated. I will read to you some of Tom's comments later on in today's program. First, we return to the news after a one-week absence. We did no news last week, not because there wasn't any news. There was much, actually. A lot has been going on in the political front. We're living in very interesting times. Probably a lot of you expected me to comment last week on the recent Supreme Court ruling over Obamacare. Instead, we featured film critic Mark Boobian. You see, news is only a part of what we do. The Bob Siegel Show was not designed as a news talk show per se. Yes, we discuss the news, but primarily, we are a program that deals with the subject of Christianity, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Last week was a pop culture edition. Now, if I were on every day, we could get to the news on every program. Once a week is a different story. I have to be selective. And I enjoy maintaining the variety of this program. Christianity is a multifaceted subject, after all. It not only relates to the political scene, it relates to all of life. Christianity is about life. There are many people who download our movie review programs, and I suspect a good deal of these are artists and art lovers who would not be interested in talk radio otherwise. Some of them might not even be interested in God otherwise. So anyway, that is why you don't hear the news every week, but we will return to it today. And oh, what a return it is. Chief Justice John Roberts' recent surprise decision to uphold the Affordable Health Care Act as constitutional has birthed enough hot air explanations to fill every elegant Washington, D.C. ballroom with wall-to-wall helium balloons. Some explanations sound more logical than others. Of course, Roberts himself offers no psychological interpretation of his decision. Instead, he presents his rationalization in legalese. We are expected to accept this man's wise observation that the government mandate to buy health insurance is unconstitutional when it attempts to use the Commerce Clause as a green light, but constitutional if we view it as a tax. Are you following this logic? You should, because it's absolutely brilliant. You see, the government does not have the right to force its citizens to purchase insurance or anything else. Instead, the government has the right to tax its citizens if they refuse to buy the insurance. Wow. Thank you, Justice Roberts. It's all so clear now. We are grateful that men like you attended law school so that the rest of us simpletons can have our Constitution explained in such a consistent and sensible way. Of course, the Obama administration did not sell this albatross to the public as a tax, and it probably would never have been approved by Congress as a tax. After all, candidate Obama had promised not to raise taxes on the middle class. On the other hand, Obama's legal representation did call it a tax in front of the Supreme Court while calling it a penalty at the same time. By talking out of both sides of the mouth, The idea was for the court to mark a correct multiple choice answer. Who would have thought the Supreme Court would bite? Obama flip-flops. Oh, excuse me. Evolutions. Obama never flip-flops. He evolves. Obama evolutions are expected, but nobody predicted such a song and dance from Justice Roberts. What could he have been thinking? Well, lots of explanations have been put forth. Here's the most popular three. Explanation one, this reasoning truly makes sense. It truly makes sense to the sincerely motivated judge. Well, if such were the case, Roberts would be competing for the most idiotic ruling ever to come down from a bench. Say what you want about our Chief Justice, the man is not stupid. And for that reason, explanation one does not hold up. I don't call a man an idiot easily. Oh, it's been known to happen. But as a general rule, I give people the benefit of the doubt. Any graduate of Harvard has something on the ball. Yeah, they teach weird things at colleges these days. But still, you can't be a dummy and graduate Harvard. So, what about explanation two? Even people with lifetime appointments care about public opinion. Roberts was losing sleep over the good graces of newspapers such as the New York Times. Well, according to this theory, he is simply a coward. If we now have a gutless wonder heading the Supreme Court, our situation is too depressing to dwell upon. Instead, we'll mercifully move on to explanation three. And this is the most common one. The conventional wisdom asserts that Roberts is concerned about the Supreme Court's objectivity as far as public perception is concerned. He wants to hold on to his reputation as one who is hesitant to overturn a law of Congress, even a law he personally doesn't like, by desperately seeking to find some means to uphold the law, even reasoning that is a stretch of the imagination, the integrity of the court is preserved, and conservatives will be more fueled than ever for the 2012 election. Then, the next time a more conservative law is challenged and taken to the Supreme Court, such as a state-made marriage law like Proposition 8, nobody will be able to accuse Roberts of judicial activism, even if he sides with the conservatives. Under such a strategy, Obamacare can still be struck down in November by the electorate, our public can continue respecting the Supreme Court, and conservatives are free to make future rulings without fear of criticism. Win, win, win. Okay, let's evaluate this. Although the explanation may make more sense than the others, and may indeed be just exactly what Roberts figured out in the caverns of his mysterious mind, it is full of holes. For one thing, folks, who are we kidding? Conservatives will be hated by the liberal elite every single solitary time they make a conservative decision, period. Nobody's going to stop and say, and we should pay attention to Roberts this time. After all, the man has proven his objectivity already. Yeah, right. Now I'll tell one. I mean, how serious is Obama taking the other recent Supreme Court ruling about an Arizona law, which now allows police to ask for records when they stop people and report information to ICE? Obama's utter contempt for that decision and refusal to cooperate has been made abundantly clear. Meanwhile, the fact that four liberal justices voted to uphold most of Obamacare doesn't seem to make anybody bat an eyebrow. They don't even flinch. This is because only conservative decisions are viewed as extreme or activist in our politically correct world. There's no such thing as an extreme liberal. Liberal justices merely exhibit the moderate common sense that any thinking person ought to have. Still, all politics should be laid aside to make room for the bottom line. And here it is. Even if Roberts were to succeed in rescuing the Supreme Court's reputation for objectivity, he was not put in office to protect the court's popularity. He was put in office to protect the Constitution. Alas, Chief Justice Roberts, this you have failed to do. But there is a bright spot on the horizon. So don't despair. Having trouble deciding what to buy your friends for their wedding or some special occasion? Did the coupon for a free Slurpee from 7-Eleven seem too uncreative? Well, be of good cheer. Our President of the United States even had your social life in mind when he took a pledge to defend you. In a burst of inspiration that men like Lincoln and Jefferson could not have put together in their wildest dreams, the Obama Event Registry has made its mark upon history. The registry site says, and folks, I'm not making this up. You're going to think I'm making this up. You're going to think this is something you'd read in The Onion. This is the truth. The Obama Event Registry, you can find it online. It says, instead of another gift card you'll forget to use, ask your friends and family for something that will go a little farther, a donation to Obama for America. It's a great way to show your support for a cause that's important to you on your big day. Yeah, it's the truth. Examples of a big day include weddings, birthdays, anniversaries, even bar mitzvahs. The site is especially helpful in as much as it suggests appropriate wording for the unusual request. For my big day, I'd like to show my support for a cause I believe in, re-electing President Obama. That's why I'm asking my friends and family to donate to the Obama campaign. Thanks for chipping in. Well, brings a tear to my eye. Just when we thought we'd seen everything, our mold-breaking president springs his latest surprise like a fun, sneaky jack-in-the-box. Now, genius ideas always inspire additional creativity, and so in the spirit of patriotism, here are some other ways that I've come up with to support President Obama and his many causes. When voting for your favorite contestants in reality shows such as American Idol, arrange to have the vote count for Obama's November re-election instead. If the contestant complains, explain that we are merely being compassionate and socialistic by spreading the fame around. Or, while betting on a football or baseball game, arrange to have your winnings sent to the Obama campaign. If you lose, the government will withdraw funds from Mitt Romney. How about this one? At movie theaters, arrange to have your popcorn and candy money sent to Obama. This will serve the double goal of re-electing Barack and conforming to Michelle's nutritional standards at the same time. Or instead of your annual donation to the local zoological society, have the funds made out to the veterinarian who gives checkups to Obama's little dog, Bo. How about this one? Instead of congratulating your friends when they become proud parents of a newborn baby, send a contribution to Planned Parenthood. And finally, instead of arresting illegal immigrants, cops can give them a pass so that they might find a poll that does not ask for ID and vote for Obama. Oh, wait. Never mind. This one is already being done. I guess truth is stranger than fiction, after all. Well, if you would like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in toll-free number, 888-344-1170. Many people reaching us at questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions at Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net, or through Facebook or through Twitter. People are following us concerning Justice Roberts. Lisa on Facebook likes what I have to say and says very interesting. And we'll look at other comments when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. Reading some comments here regarding the things I said about Chief Justice Roberts. This fellow uses kind of an internet pen name called Just a Moderate. I got to say something about moderates. That always sounds so good, being a moderate. But keep something in mind. The left keeps moving more and more and more to the left. those who stay in the center by relationship to the left, moving more leftward, look like they're moving more to the right, but they're not really moving. And so those who don't want to call themselves the right but want to call themselves moderate, they really keep following the left. So I don't always buy it when people call themselves a moderate. Are there real honest-to-goodness moderates out there? Yeah, but not as many as we'd like to think. But that always sounds so good. Oh, I'm a moderate. I'm a moderate. Well, I'm a conservative. I'll say that. Technically, I'm probably a moderate too, but the left moves so much to the left that by relationship, by comparison, I look like I'm way on the right. Anyway, having said that, this guy calls himself just a moderate. He says, so you are actually posing the question of whether the Chief Justice was idiotic, option one, or a coward, option two, but then settled on the conclusion that this was some slimy way to appear to be objective, but then be able to get back to his real beliefs in Proposition 8 cases. You make him sound like a ball player trying to throw a game, but still making a shot or two so it isn't too obvious. Realistically, it almost seems better to be an idiot or a coward than to be that transparently partisan in a role typically reserved for some of the brightest legal minds of our time. Well, a lot of the decisions the Supreme Court have made recently don't seem too bright to me, but I'll go on and read about what Mr. Moderate says about the brightest legal minds of our time. He continues, the only reason that you ruled out option one is that you feel that Justice Roberts would have to be an idiot to have ruled as he did. When this exact idea was written by Republicans 20 years ago, and he means that Republicans were willing to call this a tax, conservatives thought it was unconstitutional. It seems like you have to either call all Republicans idiots, or you do indeed need to call your Chief Justice an idiot if he saw the mandate today as Republicans saw it 20 years ago. Okay, let me respond to this. The idiocy is not in parsing words like tax or penalty, but rather in the claim that the government cannot force us to buy something, yet can tax us if we refuse to buy this same thing. That's a lot of double talk. Once again, I do not believe Roberts is an idiot. I believe he thinks he is protecting the integrity of the court, and he probably had trouble writing that decision with a straight face. Robert on Facebook says, this man is a genius or a complete dolt. We will have to wait a while to judge his mental capabilities. The law is a trap. James on Facebook says, I think there is something really evil going on behind the scenes with these Supreme Court justices. How much have you really heard in the news about the issue of Justice Breyer being robbed at knife point earlier this year while on vacation, and hardly anything mentioned in the news? Well, yeah, there wasn't much mentioned in the news because I don't remember hearing about this in the news. Anyway, and I watch the news all the time. James continues, says, this was virtually an assassination attempt on Breyer, and the news in Congress doesn't even call for an investigation. Well, James, I certainly had not been following this story. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. I will look into it. Maureen says, Bob, explanation two makes the most sense. He's a gutless wonder, and I might add a turncoat. He also ruled in favor of lying about receiving medals of honor in the military. So you have to conclude that Roberts is no conservative and is for sale. Well, you may have a point, Maureen. All I know is that whatever is driving him, whatever it is, it's not a true reading of the Constitution. Rob says, Obama has dirt on JR. Too bad he wasn't properly vetted by Bush. And then responding to the literary version of my thoughts about Roberts, Mike says, good article. I am so disillusioned by the political situation in this country. As am I, my friend. As am I. Ains says, truth is, Justice Roberts is not entering a popularity contest, and he does not care what the public thinks of his opinion. Really, Ains? And you know this how? Exactly? Are you a mind reader? If Roberts truly believes in the opinion he wrote, if he wrote that opinion because he's really taken that seriously, well, then he believes in something indefensible. The government can't make you buy something you don't want, but they can tax you if you refuse to buy it. Explain to me what part of that makes any sense, Ains. Nick says, brilliant analysis, Mr. Siegel. I just have a quick comment to add. I didn't know that Justice Roberts was such a high-stakes gambler. It's either going to be win-win-win or lose-lose-lose. I'm not sure if most conservatives are willing to gamble to this extent. And then regarding what I had to say about the Obama registry, Nick says, very funny and creative material as usual, Mr. Siegel. Well, thank you, Nick. You always write encouraging comments. And then Maureen says, love your ideas about how else we should have our money donated. Okay, these past few weeks, I have been responding to some comments and questions from a listener named Tom, a self-professed atheist. Tom continues to go out of his way to tell me that my arguments are not persuasive. Once again, I will break it down and respond to it piece by piece. Tom says, yes, thanks for answering the questions and commenting. Again, I would like to reply. I realize that I did not respond to a lot of the stuff you said last week for two reasons. I was short on time and did not put much effort in, and because I do find it a wee bit difficult listening to what you are saying rather than seeing it written down, which would make it easier to respond to things separately. But I don't expect you to write it, so don't do that. I will just listen to the broadcast carefully. Again, the complexity of the universe. You said I contradicted myself. I don't think I did. Well, at least I didn't mean to. I said the complexity of the universe does not suggest that it had to be created by God, and I said it is complex because we see it as complex. I think that individually we all decide what we think is complex. For example, I might think algebra is complex, but to a math professor, it may not be complex at all. If you understand something well, it is not complex. If you do not understand it, then you can see it as complex. You can say the universe is complex. All that means is you think it is complex. Somebody who studied astronomy for a number of years may not look at it as complex, or at least not as complex as you look at it. Do you not agree that something isn't just complex by default? Well, one thing I can say, the audience is going to be awfully tired of the word complex by the time we're done here. Anyway, Tom, by complex, I meant an object or phenomenon or process or life form that could not have come into existence by randomness and chance. Sure, we can learn how, for example, a computer works. And in time, a computer will not seem as complex of a problem to a computer wizard, but you would not hear this same computer operator assert that the computer came about by accident either. The computer was still an invention of human beings, programmed by human beings, even if the usage of it became easier. In that vein, Tom, the human brain and human body, being far more complex than a computer, could not possibly have come into existence by accident and chance. Our very DNA serves as a kind of computer program, pre-ordering in advance what we will be like, our appearance, even our personality traits. Okay, Tom continues, when talking about evolution, what I meant to really say was evolution explains how humans evolved to what they are today. I can't say I studied evolution in great detail, but I know people who have, and there's some very famous people who have. For example, Richard Dawkins, who has written several books on the subject. You said I failed to respond to how personality comes into being. Fair enough. I cannot explain that. No scientist in the world, with all their years of studying, could be sure of that. But that does not mean you can say it is more likely than not that it needed an intelligent designer to bring it into being. I'll respond to Tom when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show, dialoguing with my friend Tom. that's the third time I've responded to him. He's posing questions and then listening to my responses, And we're talking about whether the human personality is evidence for the existence of God. He admitted, I'm glad when the person admits something, that evolution does not explain how personality came into being. He says, fair enough. I cannot explain that. No scientist in the world with all their years of studying can be sure of that. But that does not mean you can say it is more likely than not that it needed an intelligent designer to bring into being. I think sometimes we can say what's more likely than not, Tom, and sometimes we can even go beyond that. So, Tom, let's keep in mind the definitions we've established in previous programs regarding evidence and proof. Evidence is that which points to a high probability that a given claim is true. Would you at least concede that there is evidence for intelligent design? Now, there are different definitions to proof. One of them is something that's observable and repeatable, but I also use a mathematical definition of proof. This is a different kind of proof, remember. And that one said something had to always exist. You can't get something from nothing, and you can't get the personal from the impersonal. 0 + 0 = 0. Therefore, this something that always existed must be a personality. And so regarding personality, there is proof that some kind of eternal personality must exist. Whether or not he's the God of the Bible, we'd have to then bring in questions about prophecy and history and archaeology. But some kind of personality, absolutely, we can be sure of that. But regarding other observations in the universe, because intelligent design is not just about personality, it's about all kinds of phenomena, the order of an atom or a solar system, well, that I would call evidence for intelligent design. Tom continues, evolution can explain life on this planet, but cannot explain how the cosmos came into existence. But again, that does not mean you can say that it needed an intelligent designer to bring into existence, because you do not know that. There is no way of proving that, and therefore I should not believe that. Well, Tom, there's the evidence and proof I just mentioned. You could also prove it to yourself by asking God to personally reveal himself to you. I do not believe in God. I know for a fact there's a God because I've met God. And I don't claim anything unique. This is something that the Bible says God offers everybody. Not everybody takes him up on it. Now, that's not going to convince you when I say I have a relationship with God. That's not going to convince you, Tom. I understand that. In fact, it shouldn't convince you. I appreciate the fact that you're a free thinker and you don't want to automatically be convinced. No, my making the claim that I've met God, that should not convince you. But here's what it should do. It should challenge you, Tom. It should challenge you to pursue God through prayer on your own and see if he establishes a personal relationship with you through his Spirit. Then you will not be guessing, neither will it be about faith. It will be a fact, a factual experience. Tom continues, I asked you, why does the complexity of the universe suggest it needed an intelligent personality to create it? And you said on your show, there is no other way of explaining it, that's how. Really? Now you're contradicting yourself. You agreed with me that we can't fill in the blanks with God. Well, yet, Tom, I agreed that we don't just, every time we see a mystery in science, use the word God. Sometimes science can explain mystery. So I agreed with that. But when we're getting back to the broader questions, that's another story. Anyway, so he says, now you're contradicting yourself. You agree with me. You can't fill in the blanks with God. Yet that is what you are doing. There is no other way of explaining it. Oh, it must be God. Oh, Bob, really? All astronomers should just retire? You're the one saying that the universe was created by God. Then you need to show evidence why, and you cannot say there is no other way of explaining it. Therefore, it must be true. Well, Tom, first of all, even Dawkins, whom you referred to, when talking with Ben Stein, admitted that there was evidence for a designer. He said he preferred to speculate aliens designing us rather than God. Okay, fine. But then we have to ask who designed the aliens. The buck will eventually stop. Still, let me elaborate better than I did last time. There can be no design without some kind of designer. Otherwise, we've contradicted the very definition of design. Design means, by definition, somebody designed it. Whether or not this is the God of the Bible or some other God or some other entity, that part we can speculate. But there is no explanation for design apart from a designer. That doesn't mean that there aren't other things in science that we can't explain, but we can't explain design apart from a designer. What a person can do, And what they try to do is insist that somehow this is not a design, that it should not be called a design. But then we have a bigger problem because we're left with something complex that certainly looks like it was designed. And again, when we add the element of personality there, we have agreed there has to be an eternal personality out there somewhere. Well, you haven't agreed with that, but I believe we must agree with that when we look honestly at that equation. Tom continues, design can't come from chance, you say? Again, what we see as great design isn't really great design, is it? The sun will eventually be destroyed. Bacteria can kill human beings. Jumping off a building can break all the bones in our body. What's good about that? Well, yeah, Tom, the sun will eventually be destroyed, but how did the sun come into existence? And yeah, Tom, a human being can destroy his body by jumping off a bridge, but bodies aren't created by jumping off bridges. Tom continues, again, you make your mind up on what you think design is. No, Tom, we do not make up our minds, at least not in the way you're suggesting. We make observations. Anything in nature more complex than devices that humans themselves designed must also have been designed. Now, destruction is easy. Life and complexity is not so easily explained. Tom continues, the next one is laughable. The Egyptian chariot wheel at the bottom of the ocean? If you honestly use that as the best solution to how that wheel got there, that's like me and my friends throwing something into the ocean and coming up with some crazy story to how it got there. What's the difference? I mean, honestly, that is so laughable, it is unbelievable. I hope you find that humorous because it's just ridiculous. I'm not going to spend any longer on something like that. I know you can say they dated it back to the time of when it happened, but then if Christians hear something from millions of years ago being found, the means of testing is immediately nonsense. I think he's talking about the fact that sometimes Christians don't accept the dating of this earth. I don't have a problem. I'm not one of those Christians who argues that much about the date of this earth. I'm not a believer in the young earth. And actually, we do have the means of testing antiquity, Tom. But let's back up, because I'm sure not all of you heard the show from a couple of weeks ago, so you may not know what Tom's talking about. In context, Tom had asked for evidence for the accuracy of the Bible. And he wanted more evidence than merely saying, well, they found this city or that city. He said certain cities mentioned by the Bible, authenticated by archaeology, that just means the cities existed. That doesn't mean the Bible's true. Well, fair enough. So I went out of my way to mention one of the miraculous stories. I thought, well, what if we showed some archaeological evidence for one of the stories that people doubt? And what do they doubt more than the parting of the Red Sea? Reed Sea, the real translation, was a much broader term in biblical days and could include the Gulf of Aqaba, which connects the Sinai Peninsula with the Arabian Peninsula. And we'll connect that all for you after we connect ourselves through this break. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. I'm I'm talking to my friend Tom, a self-confessed atheist. This is the third time I've responded to some of his questions and comments, and then he's been listening over the air and getting back to me. He had asked for corroboration for the Bible, so I picked one of the stories that's doubted the most, the parting of the Red Sea, the bringing of the Jews to Mount Sinai, and I mentioned several things that have been discovered by archaeologists. He keyed in on one of them, that at the bottom of the Gulf of Aqaba, there's an Egyptian spokeswheel. Now, the Gulf of Aqaba, again, connects the Sinai Peninsula with the Arabian Peninsula, and it did furnish an interesting discovery, an actual Egyptian chariot wheel at the bottom of the ocean that dates to the time of Ramses II, Pharaoh at the time of Moses. But Tom says that's laughable that I would even mention something like that. Okay, Tom, first of all, I don't mind the fact that we disagree, but I have been treating you with respect, and I've taken a lot of time to patiently answer your questions. You may not like my answers, but I've been patiently dealing with them. And this is the third program, the third time I've devoted almost an entire program to these questions, and I'm happy to do this. It's the whole reason I'm on the air, so I'm delighted to do it. I began this program for people like yourself. And you have said many things, Tom, that I do not find particularly convincing or compelling at all. And yes, I have been willing to state that certain ideas are challenged by logic, since you've asked me to defend God logically and evaluate alternative theories to God with logic, but I have been polite. And I have certainly not called your words laughable. It might be nice if you extended the same courtesy. Meanwhile, by calling it laughable, Tom, you still fail to explain how the chariot wheel got there, other than suggesting that somebody might have just thrown it in. Well, the Egyptian navy in those days was small. It did not transport chariots and horses. Could somebody have just thrown some chariot wheel on a boat and then sailed out to the middle of the ocean and thrown it overboard just for the heck of it? Sure, it's possible. Anything is possible, but not everything is likely. Because in addition to that actual chariot wheel, they found many unusually shaped coral of a shape that they've never seen anywhere else, according to oceanographers. It looks like chariots, many chariots, turned on their sides. They were guessing chariot, and then when they found the wheel, that kind of concluded that that's what it was. Coral, as you probably know, Tom, takes on the shape of its host and retains that shape even after the host decomposes. Then, right on the other side of the Gulf of Aqaba, there is a mountain called Jebel Alas. That's what they call it today. This is evidently where the real Mount Sinai is. What they call Mount Sinai in Israel is just a mountain people named Mount Sinai. This is not the Mount Sinai the Bible's talking about. The Bible said Mount Sinai was in Arabia. Jebel Alas is charred on the top by some kind of fire. I talked to an archaeologist one time. He said, look, if Moses really led his people to Mount Sinai, how come Mount Sinai isn't charred? How come we don't see any jewelry or any evidence that people were there? Well, there's a very good question and a very good answer. That was the wrong Mount Sinai. Here at Jebel, alas, evidently the real Mount Sinai, they find exactly what they would expect. Charred on the top as if some great fire came down. Figurines of the kinds of calves the ancient Egyptians worshipped at the bottom of the mountain. Nearby is a rock that looks like it was split in half by water. Now, does this prove the story of Moses? Does this absolutely prove it according to the way we define proof? No. But according to the way we've defined evidence, it is incredible, incredible evidence. It deserves at the very least some ponder, some consideration, a little more than laughter. Tom continues, you say I threw out all of history by saying I was told stories about how St. Patrick banished snakes from Ireland. You're wrong. Take World War II. We know that happened because we have photos, video footage, survivors from the actual war itself. No, Tom, you made that comment about St. Patrick. I said you threw out all of history when you claimed that the historians who talked about Jesus weren't valid because they wrote after the fact. You said since they lived after Jesus, they don't count. And I pointed out that that's the case with historians. The reason we call it history is because the event has already happened long enough ago that we see the imprint it had on society, and then seeing how it affected society, a historian will take interest in writing about it. And you compared that to World War II. That's very common for people to look at modern history and try to tell us why it's more reliable than ancient history. But the truth is, they both come to us with the same kinds of evidence, even when there's a photo, because a photo can be faked and people can lie. That doesn't mean that happened. Your whole response to the Todd Burpo book, Tom, the book Heaven is for Real, is that the man could simply be lying. Well, those are your only choices. It's an incredible testimony of the kinds of miracles you wanted to see, near-death experience you wanted to see, or the guy's just flat lying to make a buck, which is what you implied last time. Now, Tom, don't misunderstand me. I do accept the history of World War II, but when there is other history and ancient history that also has many compelling witnesses, well, we need to consider that as well. Apart from a time machine, historical accounts will always fall under the category of evidence. Tom continues, even look at something further back. You want to go as far back as the Romans? We have the ancient ruins of the Colosseum. We have all the ancient sites as well as written documents from people living in the time, not people who lived after the time. Well, Tom, you made a big point of saying that the mere ruins of an ancient city do not prove anything. Now you're switching gears. Okay, so now buildings can be evidence again? All right, well, what about the ancient church buildings? Ancient church buildings, which came into existence due to the influence of Jesus Christ. The oldest is in Jordan and dates between 33 to 70 AD. What about a carving of Pontius Pilate's name in Caesarea? What about a carving of King David's name on basalt? What about the walls of Jericho, which I've mentioned several times now, and the observation that they fell in an unusual way? What about the container of James, the brother of Jesus, the son of Joseph? If the archaeology you cite is significant, so is the stuff I just cited. All of Roman history was written by historians after the fact. Are there also other kinds of Roman writers who weren't history that wrote about things while they happened? Yes, we have that. And we also have actual witnesses with the New Testament. What do you think the letters of the Apostle Paul were? Letters written by the actual apostle. I also referred you to the report of Pilate and the Jewish Talmud. Tom continues, you can't honestly compare that to Tacitus and Josephus writing down stories about Jesus on a piece of paper. These are just stories they heard from others, by the way. Well, you're the one calling them stories, Tom. They use the exact kinds of sources that any other historian would use. Whatever documentation was available, such as the record of Governor Pilate in the Roman Imperial Archives or an interview with eyewitnesses, how is this less acceptable than any other historical record? Tom continues, we even know dinosaurs existed, and that's a long, long, long time ago. We have their remains. Well, okay, but that's an argument from paleontology. We're talking about history and archaeology, not the same thing. Tom continues, now I'm sorry this is long, but I want to address this as honest as I can. You asked me what would convince me that the Bible was accurate. Well, here it is. I would like a number of the miracles that were written about in the Bible to happen today. Hell, even one would convince me further to believe what is written in the Bible is true. All right, I'll continue dialoguing with Tom when we return.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. My friend Tom says that if the miracles which happened in the Bible were happening today, that would convince him. He says that's what it would really take. Other historians, contemporaries of the Bible, biblical archaeology, that's not doing much for him. Miracles, that's what it would take. He says, I would like a number of the miracles that were written about in the Bible to happen today. Even one would convince me further to believe what is written in the Bible is true. I, nor has anyone I know, their fathers and their fathers and their fathers and their fathers and on and on and on, none of them have seen a miracle or know anybody that has seen a miracle. I mean, something like Jesus walking on water or feeding everyone with the loaves and the fishes and all the other miracles in the Bible. I've heard you debate before, and you say miracles do occur, but just because you don't hear about them on CNN doesn't mean they don't happen. That is BS, and you know it is. If something that miraculous happened, it would be all over the world media, on the front of every newspaper, in the main headline on every news channel. Okay, Tom, I have personally interviewed many people who have miraculous claims. If you go to my website and go into the radio section, there's a whole section called Modern Miracles. I've interviewed people that were cured of cancer, leukemia, many miraculous stories. I interviewed somebody who had a near-death experience, a famous rock singer, Casper McLeod, who died and came back to life. As for books, I'm also a contributing writer for a book that's just came out last year called Miracles Are For Real. It has testimony after testimony after testimony. The primary author, Jim Garlow, has appeared on many TV and radio shows talking about this book. But if you're claiming that our major news networks do not have a bias against Christianity or the Bible, then that is a claim I'd like to see you support, my friend. In any event, I just gave you several ways that you could hear about and read about modern miracles firsthand. Tom continues, and you know what would convince me that God existed if people suffering all around the world didn't have to suffer and go through starvation while we are sitting on our behinds arguing about this? Well, Tom, I think it's an important topic. I think you do too. That's probably why you're willing to sit on your behind. And Tom, people are starving because human beings are not feeding them. There's enough food to go around in the world. Many Christians give to charities, go off on missions, work with the poor day in and day out. I'm not claiming that other people don't do that too, but Christians especially do it. There are certain things God commanded us to do. When they're not being done, it is man's fault, not God's. God said, don't kill. When I see people getting killed, I don't blame that on God. God said, feed the poor. When I see the poor not being fed, I don't blame that on God. That just tells me that God knew what he was talking about when he gave us these commands. But many Christians do feed the poor, Tom. I personally helped out many people less fortunate than me. Tom continues, maybe all God would have to do to convince me is to reveal himself. If he is a loving God, then why did he make me an atheist? Well, now you're on to something, Tom. He will reveal himself to you, Tom, if you really want him to. If you are willing to turn from your sin and turn your entire life over to him. And he didn't make you an atheist. You chose to be an atheist. Now, I was an atheist once too, so I know what I'm talking about. He gave you a mind, and you can use this mind to examine the evidence, that trail of breadcrumbs he left for you. There are modern miracles. There is historical and archaeological corroboration for the Bible. There is also the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. There is the evidence of intelligent design and the proof, yes, proof of some kind of eternal personality. Finally, Tom, you can seek God through prayer, and then you will meet him for yourself. He wants to do exactly as you wish. That's the good news. Tom says, I can't wait to hear you say I am tempted by the devil, which would be another miraculous claim. Now, Tom, don't go putting words in my mouth. I never said that on the previous two shows, and I wasn't planning on saying it now. Tom continues, for the love of God, maybe even if one of those things happened, it might be a bit more convinced, but it won't happen. They are happening, Tom. They are happening. You choose to dismiss them, and yet you have listed other things that you accept which come with no greater evidence than this. Tom continues, I'm trying not to get angry. Finally, the whole NDE argument. Again, you say Colton He's talking again about that book, Heaven is for Real. You say Colton didn't just tell his dad, but he told many people in his life. This is a story of, in case you didn't hear the previous show, of a little kid who had a near-death experience and said all kinds of things about heaven that his pastor dad knew he could not have learned in the church because he knew what his kid was and was not being taught in Sunday school. So anyway, you say Colton didn't just tell his dad, but he told many people in his life. Again, come on, Bob. In all honesty, if that happened to me, and my father knew he could make serious money out of my story. How? So here he goes again. He's going to say, well, they could just be lying. Yeah, well, okay, but those are the choices. Either something miraculous did happen, or they're making it up. Or maybe it was bad pizza the night before. How hard can it be to ring up friends and relatives and guarantee them that they will give them good food, good drink, if they don't expose them in front of everyone to be a liar? I mean, it's so obvious people do these things for money. I mean, look at all the books brought about by NDEs, near-death experiences, he's abbreviating, and the programs made from them. What a nice way to make money. I have absolutely no reason to believe it is evidence for the afterlife. And just one thing you added, Coltrane looked at his picture and said only one other picture of Jesus looked like his. So does that make every other NDE story except his and the little girl's a load of lies? That's contradicting yourself. No, Tom, that's using the kind of critical evaluation that you yourself said from the onset that we should use. I don't automatically accept every near-death experience, but if one matches up with evidence and corroborating testimony, that's different. Isn't that the way you yourself would want us to use the mind, Tom? I think it is. By the way, Tom, I know you don't live in San Diego. I know you live far away, but Todd Burpo and his son Colton are going to be speaking at Skyline Church on July 15th. Why not come and question them for yourself if you could possibly afford the trip? You see, we can always call a person a liar, but if that is the case, then why ask for the things you're asking? You ask for testimony of a miracle, but whoever reports one is going to be called a liar. You've already decided that you're just going to call them a liar, unless it's one of those honest, trustworthy, objective reporters on CNN. Tom, the record, the history, the amount of testimonies, ancient and modern, is enormous. But one can technically doubt anything. And so if you aren't convinced, and with the exception of the proof for the eternal personality, I never suggested anyway that you should accept these things as anything but evidence, then you should seek God in prayer and ask him to reveal himself to you. That's exactly what the New Testament tells us to do. Says, this is how we know we belong to him, by the Spirit he has given us. Nothing less would have convinced me. The evidence, again, is a trail of breadcrumbs, but the proof is your relationship with God. Tom continues, again, thanks for taking the time to answer the questions. You were on about ringing in for the live show, but that is very difficult because of the difference in time. I don't live in America, so the chances of me being able to ring in are very slim, especially on a Sunday. Well, we could still arrange that, Tom. I've had international calls before, and I believe we have reached a point where if you are going to continue to insist that my arguments do not hold up, I would like to see your assertion tested in a real-time conversation. But that's up to you. I wish you well on your quest, my friend. I mean that. In the last few minutes we have left, let me tell you a little bit about my background. Well, I don't have much time at all because I'm hearing the music, but a lot of you already know this. I came out of a Jewish family, and a liberal Jewish family. I was raised as an atheist, but I had a personal encounter with Christ in my second year of college. It included, among other things, actually an audible voice. A lot of the things Tom is saying, if these things just happened to me, I'd believe they did happen to me. And I was so sure of it that when my parents said, deny Jesus and return to Judaism, or we're kicking you out of the house, and you can work your own way through college and pay your own bills and cook your own meals, there was nothing to even think about. Nothing to even think about. That's how clear and real my relationship with Jesus was. I will not be with you next week. I'm actually attending my 40th high school reunion, and I've never attended even one. We will have a repeat broadcast with you of a dialogue that I had with an atheist who did come on the show, came into the studio. It was about 2, maybe 3 months ago. We will repeat that for you next week. When we do repeats, we don't just slap one on the machine. I always make sure I pick one of the better shows. I will be back with you 2 weeks from now for another live show. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.